Renaissance thinkers in the 15th and 16th centuries often turned for inspiration to the cultures of ancient Greece and Rome as they tried to introduce humanistic attitudes into the arts. This fascination was still evident in the early 1600s, when a group of Florentine intellectuals came together to plan a revival of Greek drama. To heighten the dramatic impact, they wanted the characters to sing instead of speak their parts. But they wanted the words to be understood. They devised a technique that bridged song and speech with simple instrumental accompaniment. Several composers attempted pieces in this style. When one composer finally set a full-length drama to music, opera was born. But the new singing style, attractive in theory, was monotonous in practice. It appealed mainly to intellectuals or aristocrats who liked to be known for supporting new movements in the arts. Ancient myths were favorite subjects for the lavish productions these aristocrats financed. A special favorite was the story of Orpheus, the musician. Claudio Monteverdi's Orfeo, the first opera to win artistic and public acclaim, used this story, introducing flowing melodies to replace dry, speech-like singing. Monteverdi's operas also used large casts, elaborate costumes, special effects, and a whole orchestra. With the general public, not just the aristocracy, flocking to performances, opera spread quickly throughout the major Italian city-states, achieving its greatest impact in Venice, which was the center of adventurous musical activity. Venice's first public opera house was built in 1637, by which time the new art form was a popular sensation. During the next 60 years, 350 new operas were performed in Venice alone. The new works were very different from the early Florentine style. A rapid conversational type of singing called recitatif moved the story along. So che tutto circondi e tutto miri, dai gli stellanti giri, dimmi. The action would stop periodically for a flowing melody called an aria, in which a character expressed feelings related to that moment in the plot. By now, singers had developed their technique to equal the flexibility and tonal purity of a musical instrument. This was the art of bel canto, literally beautiful singing. Singers were expected to show off their skill by embellishing the written music with elaborate vocal displays. Leading roles were written for a special type of voice called a castrato. Talented boys were castrated before puberty so that their voices, instead of deepening, developed a purity and strength that has never been duplicated. Their artistry, and that of the prima donnas, the leading ladies, were opera's main attractions. Lavish, even garish stage effects calling for complicated machinery were featured. The story lost its importance, giving rise to a conflict that has continued ever since between those who see opera as a spectacular setting for singing and those who view it as drama heightened by music. The opera house in the 1600s was a social center. Audiences talked, ate, gambled, and carried on all sorts of intrigue during the show, pausing only to hear their favorite arias. But opera was not the only musical activity flourishing in Venice. Alleluia. Basilica of St. Mark's also provided a setting for musical experiments, encouraged by its art-loving administrators. The church's unusual design created acoustical effects that had long challenged composers. Giovanni Gabrielli arranged choral and instrumental groups at different sides of the cathedral, having them play both alternately and together. Though not the originator, Gabrielli became the master of these grand effects. Gabrielli was one of the first composers to specify dynamic gradations, or levels of loudness, in his music, and to call for specific instrumentation. His music, based on an expansion of the motet idea, used vivid contrasts instead of complex polyphony. These novel effects heralded a new set of artistic and musical values based on sharp contrasts and vigorous expression, unlike Renaissance music. The new style, which gained ascendance around 1600, was given its name decades later. Baroque, implying flamboyant or overly ornate. Ancient myths, with their heroism, grandeur, and excitement, were popular with Baroque composers. They used common formulas understood by both musicians and listeners to represent the strong emotions they were trying to express. 17th century musicians believed that a small piece of music, or a selection of a larger piece, could express only a single mood or emotion. Its impact was strongest, they felt, if a section depicting one particular mood was heard following another with a different feeling. Contrasts of loud and soft, or fast and slow, such as those introduced in St. Mark's Basilica in Venice, were used to produce the desired effects. Baroque composers introduced another element of contrast in their music by using a flowing melodic soprano line and a strong supportive bass line, breaking away from the smooth blend of sounds and colors considered ideal during the Renaissance.
Most Renaissance music was polyphonic, that is, it gave equal importance to each voice line. The opposite of this, music that is based on one melody with harmonic accompaniment, is called homophonic. Baroque music was moving toward homophony, with emphasis on the soprano and bass lines. A keyboard player improvised the harmonic support, the basso continuo, which included the alto and tenor lines. Regular phrases and emphatic rhythm, characteristic of Baroque music, create a stronger sense of tonality. Baroque composers divided tonality into contrasting types, major representing happy and minor sad. The whole language of Baroque music was designed to highlight contrasts.
During the Baroque period, amateur and semi-professional ensembles sprouted in towns all over Europe. Instrumental music began to develop its own forms and styles. Brass ensembles played canzonas and suites, pieces consisting of short movements and alternating moods and tempos drawn from popular dance music. Stringed instruments reached maturity at this time. Dynasties of violin makers in Italy, the families of Stradivari, Amati, and others, built instruments that are still prized and played today. The violin was often featured in sonatas. The sonata was a piece in several movements, usually for one or two solo instruments, with the ever-present basso continuo, played on a harpsichord, reinforced by a low-pitched instrument, such as a cello. Thousands of sonatas were composed during the 17th and early 18th centuries. The Concerto Grosso, a piece for a larger instrumental group with a role assigned to a smaller group within it, was also popular. The music alternated between the small group and the larger group, a technique clearly derived from the work of Gabrielli and his colleagues in Venice. The Concerto Grosso is a type of concertato, the word that encompasses all pieces that alternate between larger and smaller groups. With music moving outside the church and court, composers responded to the enormous demand for new works by producing hundreds of operas, sonatas, choral works, and concertos. The pieces were written for the moment, with little thought to their lasting value. Composers set themselves standards of craftsmanship comparable more to the way we think of the work of a shoemaker or potter than that of an artist. Composers were supported by the church or by wealthy aristocrats in whose homes they lived as servants. They were subject to the whims of their patrons with hardly any job security or bargaining power. They developed their skills by studying with older composers, copying works by hand, and performing other laborious exercises until they could write music as quickly and naturally as a literate person writes words. Their patrons expected them to provide the kind of everyday household music that we expect from a radio or stereo. Jean-Baptiste Lully was born in Italy, the center of musical activity in the 17th century. Like many other Italian composers of the time, he traveled and helped to spread the new music abroad. Lully settled in France, where he adapted Italian opera to the French taste for pageantry and ballet. The Italian Domenico Scarlatti spent many years in Portugal and Spain, where he composed some 550 sonatas for the harpsichord, the most popular keyboard instrument of the time.
When a player presses a harpsichord key, quills pluck the appropriate strings, creating a somewhat metallic sound. No matter how hard the key is pressed, the loudness of the note does not vary. Different dynamic levels are produced by a mechanism that increases the number of strings that sound when keys are struck. Called coupling, this technique can be used for a whole passage, but not for a single note. Harpsichord music, therefore, was characterized by contrasts in dynamic level, rather than by gradual dynamic changes, which were introduced later. Scarlatti's many sonatas for harpsichord explored virtually every facet of the instrument's artistic capabilities.
By the early 1700s, Venice was no longer an important commercial center, but its musical life remained as vigorous as ever. Venetians, rich and poor, seemed to have an insatiable appetite for music. At that time, there was no body of music considered classics. So composers, Antonio Vivaldi among the most successful, worked rapidly to fill the continual demand for new works. In this city of opera houses, his operas, nearly 50 of them, were performed more often than anyone else's. But Vivaldi's most lasting works were concertos, in which he effectively highlighted various solo instruments featured against larger ensembles. He composed more than 450 concertos, usually in three movements, two fast ones separated by a slow one. The brilliance and clarity of his compositions were supported by a streamlined rhythmic insistence that strongly reinforced the tonal center. Thank you.
Especially in religious music, the new Baroque styles did not displace older Renaissance techniques. Many composers mastered both the old and the new. But the older styles were influenced by the new, the emotionalism of opera, the element of contrast, and the new clearer tonality, culminating in the style of the Northern Baroque. Organ music in Germany, where the older styles persisted longest, featured another type of contrast, free expression counterbalanced by disciplined order. The toccata, a form that originated in Italy, was especially popular with German composers of organ music. In a toccata, impulsive flights of fancy alternate with rigorous passages of counterpoint. Counterpoint is the technique for weaving polyphonic lines together. The toccata was the predecessor of another type of keyboard music that flourished in Germany, the prelude and fugue, a pair of compositions in which a free improvisatory piece is followed by a strict contrapuntal piece. German organ composers also favored the chorale prelude, a uniquely Lutheran form in which familiar religious melodies were woven among florid contrapuntal patterns. The Mass was another earlier form modified by Baroque practices. Reaching beyond its religious origins, the Mass expanded into a standardized musical form of grand proportions. The oratorio, a religious drama without costume or scenery, also developed at this time. The story was told rather than acted as in opera. The recitative, or narration, alternated with operatic-style solo arias and full choruses. The oratorio was developed in Italy and flourished in Germany. But it achieved its most lasting impact in England, where it became a national art form through the works of George Frederick Handel.
Handel was a German composer who studied in Italy, mastering Italian opera style. Moving to England, he composed more than 40 operas in 35 years, achieving great popularity. But during the 1730s, his audiences began to lose interest in Italian opera, motivating Handel to experiment with oratorios in English. His experiments were so successful that he soon regained his popularity. Of his 26 English oratorios, one, called Messiah, is the most popular oratorio ever written.
Alleluia, 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 alleluia.
Handel was not only the wealthiest, most world-famous composer of his time, but he is also one of the few whose music has never gone out of fashion. In 1685, the year of Handel's birth, another composer was born in this house in a small town in East Germany. Unlike his world-traveling contemporary, this composer spent his whole life in and around his birthplace. Johann Sebastian Bach descended from a long line of hard-working German musicians. Spent much of his adult life as a music director and teacher in Lutheran church schools. He rehearsed the choir, played the organ, and wrote music for services, as exercises for his students, or occasionally for his own amusement, while trying to support his large family. Several of his 20 children became musicians. A perfectionist with a German fondness for the older contrapuntal styles, Bach developed his technique by studying the music of others and integrating it into his own language. Often he would rearrange the music of other composers, improving structural details as he went along. Bach accepted that his life's duty was to satisfy his superiors, please his colleagues, and contribute to the glory of God. But his high standards and stubborn nature often brought him into conflict with others. He produced more than 1,000 works in all forms and styles except opera, religious choral pieces, organ solos, keyboard works, suites and sonatas for solo instruments and ensembles, works in the concertato style, and more. Bach is considered among the greatest of all composers because his music fulfilled the artistic potential inherent in the styles, forms, and techniques of his time. In that sense, Bach's works represent the last word in Baroque music. Bach often approached composition as a chance to explore a single musical problem, exhausting the possible solutions. For example, he wrote a series of 24 preludes and fugues for keyboard, one in each major and minor key, to challenge himself while providing a series of exercises. Later, he wrote another complete set on the same principle. The Well-Tempered Clavier, 48 pairs of pieces, is a masterwork of keyboard literature. When Frederick the Great of Prussia received Bach on a visit, he presented the composer a theme of his own, challenging Bach to improvise on it. Bach developed it into a musical offering, more than a dozen examples of complex counterpoint, a tribute to Frederick and his theme. Despite his intellectual approach, Bach's music was passionately expressive, with an emotional range more profound than any before, or many believe, since. Though he was not unknown in his time, Bach was regarded by his colleagues as merely a highly skilled technician, someone concerned with overly complicated techniques no longer in fashion. By now, the spirit of the time was moving music toward greater simplicity. Others, among them some of Bach's own sons, were making their reputations with a light, breezy style. Although the year of Bach's death, 1750, is generally considered the end of the Baroque period, his work, of little interest to the musicians who followed immediately, went into eclipse for more than half a century. But ever since its revival during the 1800s, it has proved to be perhaps the most durable music of all time. Music that renews itself with every generation.